were having problems finding K-12 teachers across the country.
Current shortage is around 64,000 teachers, and it's projected to be about 112,000 in 2018.
That's Bradley University Professor Dean Cantu. We'll speak with him about this issue and hear from Illinois teachers like Chris Marzik, who've left because they're frustrated.
Working with the kids obviously is one of the more enjoyable things. Leaving was kind of a tough decision, but with regards to the direction of just education as a whole, it was kind of one of those decisions I think I had to make.
Also, Illinois Senator Mark Kirk joins us to talk about his work with Mexican social clubs, reuniting Mexican Americans here with their families and neighborhoods back home.
When I visited these villages, I saw that they were just villages filled with grandmothers. So I asked them, could you get a visa to visit your family? They said, oh, no podemos, no we cannot.
That's all coming up on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The U.S. is in the middle of a teacher shortage crisis, and it's about to get worse. That's according to a new report out from the Learning Policy Institute, which says that a big part of the problem is that about 8% of the teacher workforce is lost every year. That translates to hundreds of thousands of teachers leaving the classroom, the majority of them before retirement age. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from one Illinois teacher who's in that boat. But we also wanted to find out, what does this mean for Illinois schools and its students? This is, of course, against the backdrop of big news this week regarding two public school systems and teacher contracts. This week, the Champaign Federation of Teachers voted to ratify a proposed contract agreement, meaning a potential strike for Unit 4 has been averted. That's not the case in Chicago. Yesterday, the Chicago Teachers Union set a strike date of October 11th. The union vice president tells news organizations they're taking this stand because of the current contract status. They've been working without one for more than a year, and because of pay cuts and cuts to school staffing and services. The problems of attracting and retaining teachers is something we're going to be talking about today on the program. As always, you're welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. We've got a conversation going on our Facebook page. We're joined now by Professor Dean Cantu. He's on the line from our partner station, WCBU, where he teaches at Bradley University in Peoria. He's a department chair and a professor of teacher education. Professor Cantu, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you for having me.
We're in studio with me here in Urbana is Megan Kessler. She's a former public school teacher in several schools throughout central Illinois, and she's now a graduate student in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois. Megan, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Professor Cantu, let me start with you and talk about this new report, because it states we're in the middle of a teacher shortage of, we're looking at maybe 64,000 teachers nationwide, the shortfall. How do you think we got here?
Well, this report actually identified four factors that have led to the current situation in which we have a shortage of 64,000 teachers this year, which is only projected to grow by 2018 to around 112,000. And one of the reasons you've already mentioned is the fact that we have such a high teacher attrition rate, 8% per year, which translates into nearly a quarter of a million positions that have to be filled as a result of this. And one of the this report drills down a little bit deeper, and what they find is that two-thirds of those who are leaving are pre-retirement attrition numbers. And so that means these are folks that are not leaving because of retirement, but for other reasons. And these positions have to be filled. And as a result, we have a great need for teachers. That is even more complicated by the fact that we have fewer individuals going into teacher preparation programs. That's another reason that they cite, is that we've seen over the course of the past few years a decline of about 35% individuals going into teacher education or teacher preparation across the nation. And it really all stems back to the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009.
So retention, recruitment, I want to focus on the retention issue for just a moment before we get to how Illinois is doing compared to the rest of the country, because as you mentioned, we're looking at an estimated 8% of teachers leaving the classroom each year for one reason or another, but actually a lot of them say it's because they're frustrated with some aspect of their jobs. And one of our producers spoke with a former Chicago public school teacher from Lane Tech High School. His name is Chris Marzik. He taught math for 6 years and he quit his teaching position earlier this year. He's now working for an insurance company, and I want to play what he said about his experience as a teacher.
I actually enjoyed it. I think the big thing working with the kids obviously is one of the most more enjoyable things. Leaving was kind of a tough decision, but with regards to the direction that CPS was headed in and just education as a whole, it was kind of one of those decisions I think I had to make. It just seems like with regards to the budget issues and school funding, that it's just going to continue regardless of what public school system you're in this state. I had an inclusion math class with 35 students in it, and you know, that's something that becomes extremely challenging and not really tolerable. And I know many teachers, at least at the particular school they had, I think the minimum number of students they had in a class was 31 or 32, which becomes challenging at any level. And it seems like the numbers continue to go up every year.
That's Chris Marzek, a former Lane Tech High School in Chicago math teacher. Megan, I want to ask you, Megan Kessler, who's in studio with us, you taught in a couple school districts. Mm-hmm. You now have stayed in the teaching field. You are a graduate student at the University of Illinois. I know, what did you hear from your colleagues who left for teaching for other careers? How common is that, what we just heard from Chris?
I mean, I think the Learning Policy Institute report is definitely representing sort of the experiences of teachers on the ground, so to speak. I know I can speak mostly to my own experience having left the classroom. I would attribute it mostly to a lack of professional growth opportunities or professional development opportunities. If you're not interested in moving into administration, there can be a bit of a ceiling for teachers who would like to pursue leadership opportunities and to continue to grow as professionals.
Professor Cantu, what can you tell us about the report and to Megan's point about professional growth and opportunities for teachers to have those kind of training opportunities? Was that something that was also mentioned?
It was. In fact, one of the ways that the report recommended approaching or addressing the teacher shortage is to look at, and particularly for new teachers, look at that induction period for new teachers and provide what is needed, such as mentorship and coaching and common planning periods and opportunities to collaborate with other colleagues. What they found is those school districts that provided that kind of comprehensive network of teacher support, particularly during this induction period, were twice as likely to have lower attrition numbers than those other districts that did not provide for that professional development or that PD, particularly during that induction period.
Mm. How is Illinois doing compared to the rest of the country, Professor Cantu? We talked about a 64,000 person shortage across the country. What are we looking like in Illinois?
Well, earlier this year, there was actually a report that was issued by the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools, and that's one of the questions that was asked of superintendents is have you experienced a shortage, and if so, in what areas? And what they found in that report is that broadly speaking, 60% of the school districts across the state indicated that they had difficulty staffing certain positions, and these positions, what this report revealed is these go beyond what we typically call high demand areas, such as special education, bilingual education, ESL, English as a second language. These were areas that areas such as elementary education and some of our secondary education in, certainly in math and science, but also even in, physical education, social science. And that was sort of elucidating that this went beyond what we traditionally find as high demand or shortage areas into a lot of the other licensure areas across the state.
We're going to be speaking with a superintendent from a rural school district, by the way, who's going to be joining us later on in the program about the challenges he's faced recruiting teachers to his district in Southern Illinois. Just a note to our audience. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. I know a lot of teachers are working right now, but we'd love to hear from people about what the challenges are. We'd love to hear from parents as well. You can tweet to 21st Show. You can post on our Facebook page. We got a Facebook comment from Charlene, who teaches at University High School in Urbana, and she says, "What strikes me as the biggest threat to recruitment and retention of high-quality teachers are all the policies that decrease teacher autonomy in the classroom. Top-down curricula, driven mostly by standardized testing, simply sucks all the joy out of a profession, which, in my experience, is one of the most creative and satisfying careers out there. It doesn't cost any money at all to fix this problem, but does require a lot of folks in power, from school principals to state and federal lawmakers, to place more trust in the expertise of the teachers they hire. Professor Cantu, do you feel like there's a problem with the lack of trust of teachers who work in the public school system, to Charlene's comment?
Well, that was one of the questions the Learning Policy Institute posed to those teachers who leave the field. And that area that you're talking about actually ranked number three in terms of the reasons that were articulated for leaving the teaching profession: dissatisfied with school assessment, accountability policies. And actually that was followed by the number four reason was dissatisfied with administration. So that, again, is one of the areas that is being cited by teachers as a reason for them to leave the profession prior to retirement age. And it's also one of those areas they also asked what would bring what they call leavers back and re-entrance, as they're called. About one in three teachers will actually come back in and re-enter the workforce. And that is one of the areas, as well as something that was addressed earlier, and that is, guarantee of retirement benefits and salary, as well as a smaller student-teacher ratio within
the
classroom.
So those are the top two, then?
Right. Those are among the top reasons.
Megan, I wanted to ask you about that, about the bureaucracy, about this standardized tests. And you do hear this from teachers a lot. I wonder what your opinion is on that.
I taught social studies during my 6 years in the classroom, so I wasn't as subjected to quite as much of that top-down accountability as some of my peers, especially those teaching in math and more heavily tested subjects. But I do think, in Illinois especially, we've come through a real strong cycle of lots of different reform measures. They come out really frequently, and the expectations on teachers are to implement these rather quickly with a little bit of less training or support than I think a lot of teachers would like. And I think that's where those frustrations over a lack of autonomy or agency in your practice comes from, feeling, that you're held accountable or you're being assessed as a teacher or evaluated as a teacher on a lot of these new reform measures without quite as much support or training as you'd like to have. And it really does change the nature of your job. It changes the nature of the work that you do with your students when you're being asked to implement new types of reforms in your classroom.
Megan, what led you to leave the classroom and decide to not leave permanently, but take a break and further your education?
Yeah.
So, but still stay in the field.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of a hybrid in this situation. I left the K-12 classroom after feeling like I had hit that ceiling that I had mentioned earlier, that I was really interested in furthering leadership opportunities for myself. I was interested in teacher education. I was interested in trying to develop myself further as a professional in the education field. But I wasn't interested in becoming a principal. I wasn't interested in becoming a superintendent. Those are very different jobs.
And would you say you were frustrated with with your day-to-day job on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's always rose-colored looking back.
Right.
But I do, there are lots of frustrations when you feel like you don't have quite as much agency, and the lack of agency and the lack of leadership opportunities certainly are related kinds of frustrations.
And what led you to now? And so what's your goal now?
Yeah. So now I have, the real fortunate opportunity of working with pre-service teachers here at the U of I through my PhD graduate assistantship. So I'm teaching methods courses of social studies, future social studies teachers.
So you're teaching people who are undergraduate students who are studying to become teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you tell them?
Yeah. So it's a real kind of goal of mine for my student teachers to enter the field with real clear eyes about the state of policy in Illinois, especially social studies teachers. These pre-service social studies teachers, as we call them, have a real eye or ear for policy issues and political things. So it's important to me that they understand the challenges that teachers are facing in Illinois in our public school districts, but still enter the classroom with a real passion for improving the public school system.
Professor Cantu, do you think that, to Megan's point, is there a sufficient enough expectation setting of students and undergraduate students who are studying to become teachers? Do you think in Illinois we're doing a good job of making clear what the job of a teacher entails, particularly in a public school system?
That is one of the areas that was addressed in the report as well, and that is preparation of pre-service teachers. And what they found is that those pre-service teachers, those teacher candidates who are in program, teacher education programs, that are in a comprehensive preparation program, one in which, for example, that they're out there in the classroom, the P-12 classroom early, for example, in their freshman year, that they're out there for a number of different field experiences in diverse settings, where there's a breadth and depth of preparation, both in terms of pedagogy, as well as in content areas where their student teaching experiences at least a semester or longer. Those individuals that went through those types of comprehensive programs are 2 to 3 times more likely to stay in the profession, not leave the profession, than others who went through sort of a, what might be called an alternative or a fast track program. So that's exactly right. The, you know, helping those individuals so that they have that kind of comprehensive preparation, so they know exactly what to expect in the classroom, so that they've been given ample opportunity to be out there during their college experience, is exactly what is needed to address the high teacher attrition rate that we're experiencing.
Professor Cantu, do you think there's enough time, a student teaching classroom, is there enough time with that with undergraduate students, with, as you said, with pre-service teachers?
Well, there is, if you go beyond just the student teaching experience, and that's sort of an old school model would be if you just waited until a teacher candidate's senior year and their first time in the classroom would perhaps be student teaching. But our model here at Bradley and other institutions across the state gets the students, the teacher candidates out there early in field experiences, again, oftentimes their freshman year, and it's not a one-time only experience. You know, for example, here we literally have 5 different field experiences leading up to student teaching so that they're out there 6 or 7 semesters out of the 8 semester program.
Wow, that's great. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Dean Cantu. With Megan Kessler, we're also going to be talking to a superintendent from a school district in downstate Illinois. You're welcome to join us. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Keep the tweets and Facebook comments coming. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the teacher shortage crisis that's being faced in this country and what that means for Illinois schools. We've been speaking with Dean Cantu. He's a professor of teacher education at Bradley University. He's there at our partner station, WCBU. Megan Klessman is in studio with me here in Champaign at WILL. She's a former public school teacher and a graduate student right now in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois. You're welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. We've got some tweets to 21st Show, 21ST Show. I'm going to get to in a minute as well. And I want to bring one more person into this conversation. Chuck Blyer is a superintendent of the Pope County School District 1 in downstate Illinois. Superintendent Blyer, welcome back to the 21st. Thank you for taking time to be with us today, especially in the middle of a school day.
Well, thank you, Nyla.
Last time we spoke with you, Superintendent Blyer, was back in June. You were telling us about the impact the state budget impasse had on your school district. It's a rural school district that depends on the state for about 60% of your annual budget. And I wanted to bring you back today to talk about another set of challenges that you face, and that's what we've been talking about, which is recruitment and retention of teachers. What makes it hard for you to get good teachers into schools in your district?
First, I'd like to concur with Megan and Dean. They were spot on their analysis of what's going on in Illinois with teachers. As far as able to recruit teachers to my district or any rural district, you're usually looking for people that are, of course, living in your area. That's the best way that we can retain a teacher. That means that sometimes we don't have the necessary people in our area because we're rural, and then that means people are going to drive in. So with the drive-in of maybe 40, 50 miles a day, that means that person is going to come and work for me as long as it takes for them to get a job closer to home.
Yeah, that's tough, right?
That's how it works, yes.
As we're talking about this, our callers are welcome to join our conversation. It's 1-800-222-9455. Again, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Carrie in Decatur. Hi, Carrie. You're a former teacher.
Yes, I am. I taught high school English for 20 years.
And what do you think would help attract more young people into teaching, into keeping them into the field?
I think if they felt safe and secure in their workplaces. I believe that a lot of them are ignored by older staff, or worse, they're bullied off the jobs by older staff. because they get dumped on with the bad students in the school, the difficult to educate students, and the extracurricular activities, the committee assignments, and so on and so forth. We burn them out oftentimes in the first 25% burnout in the first 5 years, and then people leave the profession. Those that stay sometimes dig in their roots. They become more expensive. A lot of those are the best teachers, but some of those are the worst teachers who set up a cushy situation, and anybody who wants to expose them better watch out.
Okay, well, thanks for I appreciate that comment, Carrie. Professor Cantu, I wonder if you could speak to Carrie's comments about teacher burnout, and particularly in the first year. I know we touched on this briefly in the first part of our conversation. What does your research show on that front?
Right. Well, again, that first year is a critical period of time. One of the things that that the study shed light on is the fact that without that kind of support system or support network, the percentage of teachers who leave, the attrition rate for that first year ranges from 18% to 41%. And there are things that can be done, obviously, on a part of a school district to try to lower that attrition rate. And some of those are having that sort of support network, looking at some of the ways in which they can provide that kind of coaching to first-year teachers, for example, you know, having an induction program in place, that mentorship, creating a collaborative environment so that that some of the teachers, the veteran teachers, can serve at, truly as mentors and coaches and provide the support that the first-year teacher needs. With that kind of a network, the school districts can address the attrition rate and be sort of at the lower end of that as opposed to in that upper 40% mark.
Superintendent Blyer, how do you handle creating a supportive network for teachers within your district?
That's a good question, because over the last 3 years, I've hired six new teachers right out of college. I personally make it an objective of my job to go to those teachers and talk to them personally and ask them how they're doing and how I can help them with their position. And then I enable the principals to also provide that support. Most of the young a lot of younger teachers, at least when I came into the profession a long time ago, was here you go, now have fun. But now what we try to do is bring that person along as a faculty member and engage them in their daily work day. And then as the year goes along, keep assessing and bringing them along, make them feel a part of the infrastructure of the staff. And if you don't, I've seen this go bad for teachers, because that, like Professor Cantu said, they'll just leave because they'll consider it, I didn't take the right profession, and they'll just end up immediately. So the youth need guidance, and I try to provide it.
I understand, by the way, when we're talking about the shortage and we're looking at applicants, at one point you used to have up to 50 applicants for teacher openings. Nowadays, you have as few as 5 people applying for an open position. I know there's a school in your area in Southern Illinois that couldn't find a math and science teacher at all. How did they end up handling that?
Right. They have actually brought back a retired teacher to come in for like once a week or twice a week to make sure the curriculum keeps flowing, and then they sub that job out the rest of the week to a sub who just makes sure that things are turned in. Also, they'll use online curriculum and math, like the Khan Academy. And most curriculum today is built with an online component, so there'll be a lot of basically kind of coaching subs versus hiring a teacher. And it's not that they don't want to hire a teacher. They're desperate to hire a teacher, but they can't find one. But one thing that is different about Illinois is that we have a very difficult time recruiting teachers out of the state because of teacher prep programs in Illinois and reciprocal programs throughout the country. Illinois is very difficult to get a license in. So once you get all you're perfectly capable to teach in Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, Indiana, which I border,
Right. So you're so close states. To that, right? Because you're so close to Missouri, yeah, Indiana, and Kentucky. That's a potential pool for you, but you're not able to because of licensing requirements. Is that what you're saying? It's not you're not really easily able to recruit?
Absolutely. It's not only that, but once let's say we bring a teacher across the border, then they have 1 year to get their credentials and their licensure up to speed, and that's more money and then more time after work, and it's just not conducive towards a recruiting environment. And the sad part is that we in Illinois pay pretty well, but when you balance out, you're young and you're driving a lot and you've got the pressure going back to school, and it's a factor that inhibits our ability to recruit.
That's Superintendent Chuck Blyer. He's with School District Number 1 in Pope County. We're talking about teacher shortages, the teacher shortage crisis. We're talking about recruitment, retention throughout Illinois. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to a caller in Chicago. Hi, Chris. You're with the organization Chicago Parent Congress. What's that, and what's your comment?
Yes, hi. The Chicago Parent Congress, thanks for having giving me a second, by the way, but we are a group of parents who started to come together a few months ago just because we felt like a lot of these conversations around education don't include the voices of parents. We think that right now in Chicago, the big conversation around teaching is the strike. And as I listened to the program this morning, we've got a lot of problems that we need to fix, and none of them include the four issues that our teachers are getting ready to walk out on our kids because of. And, you know, the issue of wages, steps and lanes, pension pickup, and health care. We're not striking, no matter what we hear the union talk about in the press, we're not striking about mentoring. We're not striking about coaching. We're not striking about creating the kind of environment that's going to mean success for teachers and for students. We're striking up with those four issues. And so the Parent Congress is very much against this strike, not because we think everything is perfect, but we don't think that the issues that are causing teachers to walk out on our students are very legitimate. As we just heard on your program, we pay really well in this state, and in Chicago, we make more money than, you know, only the wealthiest districts in the state pay more than our district.
Thanks for your comment, Chris. That's Chris in Chicago. And again, he's referring to the decision yesterday, the news yesterday from the Chicago Teachers Union to authorize a strike for October 11th in Chicago in that public school system. Professor Cantu, you know, as we're hearing all of these conversations about, you know, pay, it's interesting that did pay come up in the survey in terms of salary? Did teachers talk about that in terms of whether or not that was something that caused them to leave teaching?
Some of them listed that on the reasons why they left. However, what's interesting is if you look at the reasons, what would bring back those who have left the profession and potentially be re-entrants, the increase in salary was the third most common response. Actually, 67% of those who responded said an increase of salary would be one of those variables that would have to be in place in order to come back. And actually, ahead of that was the ability to maintain their teaching retirement benefits. That was number two at 68%.
Okay.
So those are issues that are variables that individuals look at when they're considering whether or not to come back into the profession. And one in three do make that decision to come back in. And that's a pipeline that is much needed to address the teacher shortage issues that we're facing.
I appreciate this conversation. We've got a couple minutes left to wrap up. And as we do that, I really want to think about talking about solutions. And I wonder, for Superintendent Blyer, if I can ask you about what would be, if you could give me the top three most helpful things that would help you recruit and retain teachers in Illinois, what would those be?
Wow, top three. Okay, number one.
You can give me more than three if you need to. That's okay.
Well, no, I won't do that. Relax the licensure requirements. It's too tight. The one thing that also hasn't been really talked about is the teacher program itself. There are so many requirements that are placed upon college students to get through the teaching program that I didn't have to go through when I went through it. that really takes a lot of money and time and more coursework and testing. They test them to death. And a lot of the youth today are like, why do I want to go through that and make $35,000? So that's just the ability to get the kid through college. And, of course, college is extremely expensive, as we know. So something along those lines, if college would reduce its costs, which they're not going to do, if they would relax the requirements to get the student out of the teacher education program, which I doubt they're going to do that, but I think the governor and the assembly could relax the licensure and allow for people to become more mobile.
Thanks for that. Professor Cantu, I wanted to ask you, we asked our followers on Twitter about what could be done to attract teachers to Illinois schools. We got a tweet from Jenny who says, creating fair requirements for people who want to change careers and become teachers, that's something that should be done. Do you think that that's a difficult situation right now if someone wants to change fields and become a teacher? Is that a tough thing?
Actually, what we're starting to experience an increased number of individuals who are what we call post-baccalaureate degree licensure students who are interested in changing careers, who already have a baccalaureate degree. And Bradley, as well as other institutions in the state, have programs in place, post-baccalaureate licensure programs in place to create avenues for these individuals to come in and over a certain period of time be able to complete all of the requirements relative to the Illinois Administrative Code or the rules for their respective licensure area. So those are available, and we're starting to see an increase in the number of individuals who are making that very decision, coming back and trying to meet the requirements for a teaching license.
Megan, what do you think? What would you like to see? What's the number one thing you think needs to happen to help recruit and retain teachers, particularly as we're thinking about Illinois?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question. I agree with Professor Contoon saying that these post-baccalaureate programs are wide open and really strong. For anyone interested in gaining licensure, I would especially encourage that track rather than some of these fast-track programs. I think they're a little less well-prepared, and those field experiences that we talked about might be a little bit diminished in some of those fast-track programs. But I think overall, I think Illinois suffers from an issue of a lack of equity funding of our public schools. I think that's probably why these rural districts are experiencing such pull from their staffs, is that they're not able to offer some competitive offers to teachers who are looking for positions, and just overall more support. As Professor Contu mentioned, those first 3 years or so are so crucial, and providing support from the state for mentoring and induction programs so that teachers who are entering for the first time aren't feeling so lost.
Let's end our conversation with a caller, Fred in Leland. Welcome to the 21st. You've got about 30 seconds. What comment did you want to make, Fred?
Oh, hello. Thank you. I don't know. It just seems simple to me. I mean, I'm just a regular guy, but it's just support. Support for the teachers, you know, support and pay for one thing. They're really low paid. Support from the parents, support from the school itself.
Yeah.
They're just not respected enough. They're not given. Kids are sent to school, and they're not sent there for the parent, for the teacher to raise the kid. They're sent there to be taught, to be educated, and the parents need to help with that. They need to tell them to respect what the teacher's trying to tell them. You know, right or wrong, the teacher's in charge, and they've got to direct them, and they kind of got to go with that.
Thanks for that, Fred. I appreciate your comment. That's Fred in Leland. I want to thank Professor Dean Cantu joining us from our partner station WCBU at Bradley University, Megan Kessler on studio with me here in Champaign at the University of Illinois, and of course Superintendent Chuck Blyer joining us from Pope County, where he is superintendent. Thanks to everyone who called and tweeted and posted as well. Thanks for being with me. Thanks for for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Earlier this month, Illinois Senator Mark Kirk joined with Mexican officials to announce a partnership with a Mexican-based nonprofit organization and their new alliance of Mexican social clubs throughout the Midwest. Mexican social clubs work with their partnered neighborhoods and states in Mexico to help raise funds and resources for local Mexican citizens, which includes helping Mexican citizens visit their families back in the U.S. Senators and other federal representatives often help constituents with immigration services, such as processing visas. Senator Mark Kirk's Abuelitas program was started in 2005 specifically to help Mexican grandmothers and grandfathers obtain short-term travel visas to visit their relatives in the U.S. In a few minutes, Senator Kirk is going to join us to talk about the program, but we wanted to start by finding out more about these social clubs. Ana Flores is with us now. She's a member of the Cuitzeo Social Club, which represents the state of Guanajuato. Ana, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Nyla. Thank you so much for having me.
Where is your social club based? What town in Illinois are you guys?
We are located in Aurora, Illinois.
And what does it mean? What does the Cuitzeo Social Club do?
Well, a variety of things. And just to kind of give background about us, we initiated in February of 2011. And we're a social club that, in a sense, has we initiated to kind of bring the gap between those that reside here in the state of Illinois, and particularly those that are from our community back home with those members from our community in Mexico. So we do different sorts of events, and we participate a lot in developing projects in Mexico to help our immediate community, which is still kind of located in rural areas. So we participate in different programs offered by the Mexican government, like a program called 3-for-1, in which we can participate with, you know, infrastructure projects to kind of develop our area, as well as community and social events.
So I'm sorry, infrastructure projects in Aurora or in Guanajuato?
In Mexico.
Okay.
In Mexico.
And so this is, and is this, or social clubs, would you say that's a way to sort of a formalized way for groups to kind of help not just family members, but the villages or areas that they came from in Mexico?
Definitely. Definitely. I think that's one of the biggest goals and purpose of establishing social clubs. There's so many all across the U.S. And in a sense, it's really meant to kind of form this feeling of community. A lot of times, you know, people move here to the U.S. and don't go back to Mexico right away, or, you know, all that. So it kind of really helps to kind of keep the community together.
How many different social clubs are there throughout Illinois? And is this something that happens in other parts of the Midwest and the country as well?
You know, I would not be able to tell you how, like, a concrete number, but there's a good amount. Definitely there's been and there are social clubs that represent all the different states of Mexico. So it's not just our state, Guanajuato. That I know of, that I've met members, probably 15 clubs around the Chicagoland area, but there's so many, especially in California and Texas, North Carolina. I would not be able to tell you how
many. Sure, there's so many. Ana, why do you think these clubs are important?
Yeah, I believe the clubs are so important because it really, once again, goes back to just creating the sense of community, and it brings everybody together. Prior from us initiating our club, we didn't really, you know, talk to a lot of people that are from back home. We didn't really get together to do big projects. But once we started, we really kind of found this strength in uniting with one another and kind of sharing our experiences and getting together to do fundraisers, you know, when somebody's sick. It just kind of helps bring that back and kind of helps us be really close and tight with our community back home in Mexico and just in Aurora in general.
And have you had personal experiences with this Abuelitas program yourself?
Yes, I have. I mean, actually, today we have a trip traveling to the city of Guadalajara in Jalisco, Mexico, to the consulate. They have their appointment to go get their visas. So we're going to see if our group, this is our 10th group that we are participating in, our 10th group we put together. And I participate directly in the whole program with our group, with our social club. And it's something that's honestly quite amazing to be a part of. And it's something that's super neat. And I think everybody that has witnessed what's called a welcoming, which is when, you know, the group of individuals go and request their visas. If whoever's granted the visas, we do a big welcoming for them. And we don't let their families go for the air to the airport for them. We kind of just have this big venue, this big event, and we do a ceremony. And a lot of times there's families that haven't seen their parents for, you know, 25 years. I think that's been the most. So, I mean, that's a whole lifetime there.
Wow. Well, thank you for joining us and to sharing us a little bit about the program. Ana Nino Flores is a member of the Cuitzillo Social Club, which she's been telling us represents the state of Guanajuato. She's in Aurora, Illinois. Thank you, Ana.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to The 21st. We're talking to State Senator Mark Kirk now. Senator Kirk, I wanted to talk to you about the Abuelitas program. I know you've been working on this issue actually since before you became a senator when you were in the House. How did you first hear about these Mexican social clubs?
I knew more and more about my communities. You know, in Illinois, people don't emigrate from Mexico itself to the United States. They emigrate from Tampico, Estado de Mexico, to Waukegan. Each major city in Illinois has a major connection to a village in Mexico where everybody comes from. In the case of Waukegan, it's about 60,000 people from the same village in Michoacan. And when I visited these villages, I saw that they were just villages filled with grandmothers. So I asked them, could you get a visa to visit your family? And they said, oh, no podemos, no, we cannot. And I said, if we all came together as a group and came and went as a group and 100% compliance with immigration law, would you be willing to work with me? And they said, of course. So since that time, we've had 3,000 abuelitas come in to the United States to visit their families.
I know that when the families arrive, they have a welcoming ceremony that you've also attended. What are those welcoming ceremonies like?
Very tearful. Sometimes sometimes 20 years since the families have seen each other. Many times when the abuelita comes in, she hasn't met the grandkids. There's an interesting sidelight that has a problem that I didn't think about, that when you let the abuelita into the house, and she hasn't been there for a while, since she's the mother-in-law, she inspects the whole house, and the husband has to go crazy fixing everything. And that's a fun part of this reunion process that we've noticed.
Senator Kirk, a few weeks ago, I know you all announced a partnership between some of these social clubs and the state of Mexico, helping further fundraise and have another Mexican governmental conduit. Would you like to see these connections happen with other Mexican states, not just the state of Mexico?
Yeah, I think there are 28 or 32 Mexican states. Mm-hmm. We're trying to expand it and make sure that we have 100% compliance with U.S. immigration law. I would say, for the thousands of people we brought in, not one has violated their visa. Otherwise, I told them, if that happens, I will shut down the program.
And how are you ensuring that that happens?
We work with the local mayor to make sure the police can check the background of the person coming in. And we do our own checks to make sure that the accepting family are American citizens and have no legal problems.
And I think the program is if you're a citizen or a legal permanent resident. Is that the qualifications
correct,
for the program?
Correct, yeah. And we need citizenship or a legal permanent resident. And we're really trying to find the grandmother there to make sure that she can see the grandkids before time runs out. Because lots of times these ladies will be elderly, and you want to make sure they get to see their family in the Estados Unidos and make sure that they... there's more and more family unity, and they find a special place in Illinois in their heart.
Senator Kirk, I have to say this is very different from the tone we've been hearing from other members of the Republican Party about immigration, about Mexico this campaign season. I know that in recent years you've been an advocate of bipartisan immigration reform, but why make this announcement now, right in the middle of an election season?
We are right now. The interesting thing about my campaign against Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth has some interesting sidelights. that I am now leading among Latinos. And I speak Spanish and she does not.
But I wonder in terms of the tone that you're talking about, in terms of the tone that you're talking about regarding Mexican immigrants in particular, you're talking about reuniting families. I mean, that's a very different tone than we're hearing from, for example, Donald Trump. And I wonder, are you worried about alienating maybe Donald Trump supporters that may be...
No, Nyla, I think this is just the right thing. It reflects a growing sophistication and knowledge about the state of Illinois. In the case of most of our cities in Illinois, I need to do further work and to find that special town in Mexico that they are connected to by family and by blood. And if we can have families reunify 100% compliance with U.S. immigration law, then that's a good thing.
I wanted to ask you, Senator, just I know you're joining us from Washington. We've sort of seen this week a lot of wrangling over this 10-week spending bill. There were disagreements in the House that was being held up by funding for people in Flint, Michigan. I wanted to ask what you'd like to see in the House and the Senate right now in Washington in terms of parties working together. Do you think that's even possible right now?
Right now, I had a good day yesterday when we passed the continuing resolution that had the text of my Veterans Affairs and Military Construction Appropriations Bill, the highest ever funding bill for the veterans of our country to make sure we take care of them. It was very good work that we made sure, my legislation made sure with regard to VA whistleblowers have been helping us reform the VA. Doctors and nurses in the VA were not covered by the Whistleblower Protection Act that prohibits retaliation against them for advocating for veterans' health care. We want to make sure that we can clean up problems like we've seen at the Anna VA, the VA home run by the state of Illinois. We want to make sure that all the problems that we saw at Hines VA, cockroaches in the cafeteria, and a particularly gruesome story we heard from a whistleblower that several of the veterans had passed away and are moldering in the morgue there, and the standard procedure was not being followed for those heroes.
Senator Kirk, I can't let you go with just asking a question. You mentioned your opponent for your Senate seat, Representative Duckworth. What issues are most important for you to be addressing in the campaign as we're seeing these final months before the election?
I think right now the key issue is that Congresswoman Duckworth wants to bring in a minimum of 200,000 Syrian refugees into the country, even though the head of the FBI and the director of national intelligence says we cannot screen them because there is no database on their political leanings. I think we should listen to the former prime minister of Lebanon, who estimated about 4% of the refugees coming out of his area would lean towards jihad. I think we got to make sure we protect the people of Illinois first.
And apart from that, what do you want to be talking about? What issues are most important to you?
Right now, it's to make sure we clean up the VA and to make sure that people who want to stand by our veterans can hear their complaints and see them addressed. Make sure that we offer first-class health care to our veterans.
Senator Mark Kirk represents Illinois, running for re-election for his seat. Thank you so much for joining us, Senator Kirk. I appreciate
it. Nyla, thank you for having me on.
Senator Kirk will meet his opponent, Representative Tammy Duckworth, at the Chicago Tribune editorial board on Monday. They're also scheduled to hold another debate in Chicago, as well as one more in Springfield in late October. And a note to our audience listening, we're in conversation with Representative Duckworth's campaign about having her appear on our program as well. That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow on the 21st, we're going to be speaking with Joe Swanberg. He's the creator and director of the new Netflix series that's set in Chicago. It dropped last week. It's called Easy. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for the 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us. If you want to send us an email, if you want to leave us a voicemail, if you want to figure out how to get in touch with us on social media, that's all at our website at www.21stshow.org. The easiest way to also connect with us is on Facebook if you search for the 21st there and like us. We're produced by Christine Herman, Philip Kisabika, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help today from Steve Morick. Scott Cameron is our news director. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.